friendship we have been privileged to enjoy. We who live or have lived with the problem of alcoholism understand as perhaps few others can. We too were lonely and frustrated, but in Al-Anon we discover that no situation is really hopeless and that it is possible for us to find contentment and even happiness whether the alcoholic is still drinking or not. We urge you to try our program. It has helped many of us find solutions that lead to serenity. So much depends on our own attitudes, and as we learn to place our problem in its true perspective, we find it loses its power to dominate our thoughts and our lives. The family situation is bound to improve as we apply the Al-Anon ideas. Without such spiritual help, living with an alcoholic is too much for most of us. Our thinking becomes distorted by trying to force solutions, and we become irritable and unreasonable without knowing it. The Al-Anon program is based on the 12 steps adapted from Alcoholics Anonymous, which we try little by little, one day at a time, to apply to our lives along with our slogans and the Serenity Prayer. The loving interchange of help among members and daily reading of Al-Anon literature thus make us ready to receive the priceless gift of serenity. Al-Anon is an anonymous fellowship. Everything that is said here in this group meeting and member to member must be held in confidence. Only in this way can we feel free to say what is in our minds and hearts, for this is how we help one another in Al-Anon. The Al-Anon family groups are a fellowship of relatives and friends of alcoholics who share their experience, strength, and hope in order to solve their common problems. We believe alcoholism is a family disease, family illness, and that changed attitudes can aid recovery. Al-Anon is not allied with any sect, denomination, political entity, organization, or institution, does not engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any cause. There are no dues for membership. Al-Anon is self-supporting through its own voluntary contribution. Al-Anon has but one purpose, to help families of alcoholics. We do this by practicing the 12 steps, by welcoming and giving comfort to families of alcoholics, and by giving understanding and encouragement to the alcoholic. Ladies and gentlemen, would you join me in welcoming Betty Ann Z, our speaker for today.
Hi, everybody. My name is Betty Ann Zess. I'm a grateful member of the Tradition 5 group in Woodland Hills on Friday night. Hi, everybody, and I really want to welcome you to the Central Coast Roundup. And thank you, Alcoholics Anonymous. Is that what it's called? Right, okay. I'm in the right place. Is Kevin here and Jason and all the... And there they are. Alcoholics need to sit down. You got to take Al-Anon direction. This is so interesting. I really want to thank AA. I really want to thank Alcoholics Anonymous. And they even fed me last night. They even fed that Al-Anon. I wasn't really hungry, but they fed me anyway. But I found out that Tanya had to pay for it. Al-Anon had to pay for it. So I thank God I didn't order a really expensive food. But anyway, I want to thank Martha right away. Absolutely. Oh, I know what I was going to say, Kevin. Al-Anon's always find your mistakes, right? Does anybody know what that mistake is up there on the banner? Kevin knows. The alcoholic knows, of course. It's not 2016, right? So what year can we pick? Let's pick another year. Okay. Well, that went over well. Okay. I really want to thank Tanya, and I really want to thank Martha. Thank you so much, Martha. You're absolutely doll. Tanya, thank God you're here, and you're... Aren't these decorations beautiful? And when I walked in last night for the AA meeting, which Jack was great, he went too long, and so I'm going to go as long as he did. But anyway, you know, Al-Anon's, that's the 13th step. We just go on and on and on and on. But and you notice in the back there's these shoes, and I found out the gift that Martha's given us is that's from her father, and it's walk the talk. So whatever I say here today, know that I really walk the talk. Yeah, right. Okay. But anyway, on those shoes, what's so interesting about it, Al-Anons have such a You know, Bill Wilson said it, you know, if it wasn't for Al-Anon, I'd be dead. You know, if it wasn't for Lois, I'd be dead. And, but those shoes also have walk the talk, so you're walking, and then she has CDs on there with people's talks. How wonderful is that? Pardon? Sarah did it. Where's Sarah? Sarah, that's very special. Very special. Just all the wonderful things that you do for us. All those things that it says in our welcome. We welcome you to Al-Anon. You know, I mean, that this is such a gift here. And especially with all the raffle baskets and things. This is wonderful that, you know, I had to borrow money to buy tickets. But anyway. And then our AA speaker last night. I love AA. I love listening to AA speakers. And I'm one of those Al-Anons that forced my husband to make a free decision. Either you go to AA or I'm going to take you for everything you ever wanted or dreamed of in your life. You know, it worked. He's got 41 years almost. Hey. But I got 42 this month. Yay! Thank you. I was very young. Very young. And then also tonight, I love that our Katrina, what the hell's your name? Katya. She's our AA speaker tonight, lives in my area, and we sat at the dinner last night at the table and all this, and I'll tell you, what a beautiful woman. And you know what, being a beautiful woman, I hope you all stay tonight and hear her talk, because that might be the woman that might save my daughter's life. That's what the gift of AA is, and the women in AA and the men in AA, that's your gift to us, to Al-Anons, is your sobriety. And your sanity, most of the time. Anyway. And another thing, don't take me yet, Kevin. I want to say really a shout out to my friends from the Saturday morning meeting in West Hills. As I mean, and Renee are here. They're living up here now. And let me tell you something, they love it up here. And we're glad they're up here, too. But Renee called me Friday, it was yesterday, I guess. I don't know when she called me. And she goes, oh, you know, we're so glad you're coming, and da-da-da-da-da-da. And they showed up last night. And you know what? That's really a gift. And that's one of the gifts if you stay in Al-Anon, if you stay in Alcoholics Anonymous, if you force your kids to go to Alateen, like my husband forced my kids to go to Alateen. He told me, so you got to go to Alateen until you want to go. That was interesting. And I really want to thank all of you. And then, but I really want to thank the Bakersfield girls. The Bakersfield girls took off today, and they, Cindy and Olga and Kimmy, and they took off today and came early. They're always late, and so they missed breakfast, and which Tanya paid for. But I sent mine back. You know, again we go to any lengths. And that's. That's what the program really gives us. It gives us that sense, not only of security, it gives us that sense of purpose. It gives us what Martha put the little goodies on the table there, and it says, trust the process. And that's one of my little slogans that I always use. I just got to trust. I've got to trust in something, because I couldn't trust the alcoholic. I have this little saying I put on my Al-Anon card, and I'll be glad to give it to you after my talk, and it says, we the unwilling, led by the unqualified, have been doing the unbelievable for so long, we now attempt the impossible with nothing. You know? And that's what I tried to do all my life. I tried to attempt the impossible with nothing. And you know, I don't call myself an adult child of an alcoholic. I grew up in alcoholism, and I grew up in alcoholism with a very, you know, frustrated, violent alcoholic, and when he drank. But on the other hand, he was a hero, you know, my father was. And he just passed away this month, last year, at 94 years old, and he died without a God. And you know, God to me was, when I came into the program, was good, orderly direction. And that's what my sponsor said, until you can find a higher power, a God of your understanding, and you can go through the steps and things, she said, you know, then you'll have not only forgiveness in your heart, but you'll have compassion for the alcoholic who still suffers. My father suffered from his alcoholism, and he didn't have to drink anymore a number of years ago. but it was still the same. That's why I see so much recovery in Alcoholics Anonymous. That's why I go to open AA meetings. That's why, like Jack talked about last night, I read the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't do big book studies. I don't do any of that, and I don't bring the big book into my meetings. But that's how I learned about alcoholism. When I came into the program, you know, feeling all those feelings of unwanted, unloved, and alone, that big book was the explanation of the disease that my husband has. And also the disease of addiction that my daughter has today. You know, it's the same thing as it was 80-something years ago in Alcoholics Anonymous that it is today. The book works. The book works for Al-Anons to be able to understand the disease of alcoholism. And so, you know, I'll tell you a little bit. Jack doesn't do that. It was so funny last night. But I do. I tell you a lot of stories. And those stories then lead up to the fact of why I'm in Al-Anon and why I stay in Al-Anon. And, you know, that's the privilege of being able to be here with you, is that we have friends throughout the world, and that's the most interesting aspect, throughout the world. We have advocates throughout the world. And, you know, when I came in here, I was a broken young woman. I was very young, but I was a broken young woman. I had three children from my first marriage. My husband drank a lot of beer. I'm not calling him an alcoholic, only he could do that. But, you know, my life was completely what the powerlessness says of the first step. Is there anyone that's new here today? Anyone near here today? Good, you're old. Okay. Oh, you are? Okay. Sorry. But welcome to Al-Anon. Welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. I hope you stay throughout the weekend, and I hope you really enjoy this talk. Yeah, right. Okay. But one of the things that happened for me is that I had to come to that point just as the alcoholic does. You know, we're as sick as our secrets too. But the thing of it is that when I came to that point of the desperation and the surrender, I had to have a personal surrender. And that surrender was a spiritual surrender. There's three components to the disease of alcoholism and how it affects Al-Anons. And it's physical, mental, and spiritual. I needed the same too. I needed spiritually, instead of saying, well, please God, bring him home tonight. Bring him home from the restaurant tonight. Don't let him be drunk tonight. Or, you know, don't let my father hit my mother, you know, in a drunken rage or whatever. All those prayers that I would do, and then it wouldn't happen. It would happen that my father would beat up my mother because she, you know, disrupted his drinking or whatever. You know, please God, help me through this. And those words then came true through me through Al-Anon and through that first step of my powerlessness when I was a kid growing up in alcoholism. And we lived in a little trailer park at O'Hare, Chicago, outside of Chicago, at O'Hare Air Force Base. My father was in the service. And my mother, and then they came from a hillbilly family up northern Wisconsin via Kentucky. And my mother then was the oldest of 12 kids. My father, well, there was 9 that were still surviving in his family. And we lived in a little trailer park. Now they call them modular home parks. But we lived in a trailer park, and we lived in a little trailer. And I saw firsthand what alcoholism does. You know, my dad would come home from work, go to the local little bar in the corner, and, you know, play pool, drink, whatever. And my mother she wasn't a suffering Al-Anon, though. She was pre-Al-Anon. She was not... You know, my mother was great. She was wonderful. She loved my husband. And she loved my father, you know. She loved my father. And, you know, and she worked at Johnson & Johnson. And she came from a very poor family. And my grandmother never even had a toilet until my uncle, who was a plumber, and then built her, she had an outhouse. But, you know, I lived up north in Wisconsin during the summers and doing that because one of the things that happens, with alcoholism is that we're isolated and we're alone. You know, I spend a lot of time alone, so I have a great imagination. And so a lot of good came out of that. And that's what my sponsor always told me when I finally got one of the sponsors. And that's what she told me. All your defects of character and things, she said, within Al-Anon, she said, they'll show you what your assets are. And that's what I am, is that she said, you are an asset for Al-Anon. You're an asset and then to be, you know, love an alcoholic and to be married to an alcoholic. But anyway, I again was in this little trailer park going to school, but I would come home and my father wouldn't show up. And this one night, my mother said to me, and I didn't know this at the time, my mother was 9 months pregnant with twin boys. And no one told me, you know, those secrets, you know, in the family, the old hillbilly family. And my uncle lived down at the other trailer, and he had three kids. And my uncle was an alcoholic. He died at 46 years old with cirrhosis of the liver, and he was jaundiced and completely yellow. But anyway, he and my father would drink a lot together. But that night, my mother said to me, she goes, "Betty Ann, would you go over to the bar and get Dad? You know, go get Daddy and bring him home." I didn't know it at the time, like I said, that she was pregnant with twin boys. And I can remember going over to the bar, and I can remember how angry I was at my father. And that's what the gift of the fourth step is, that we get to, you know, write out that anger. We get to see what that anger affects, and we get to see what that resentment, and keep rescinding those resentments and over again, and how to. But anyway, I went over there, and I, you know, tried to persuade my father, you know, especially with that fear. And we were talking about it, I mean, this morning in your meeting, and Charlene's meeting this morning, the Al-Anon meeting, we talked about that 180 forms of fear or whatever. But I had this fear with my father. I really did. But anyway, I tried to con him into, you know, coming home. He wouldn't come back to the trailer. And he persuaded me, and this is the first thought that I had to go through my mind. He conned me in. And so when I heard it in AA, cunning, powerful, and baffling, he conned me to stay in that bar. And that set up guilt. You know, he offered me a little Coke, and I could play, you know, shuffleboard or whatever. And I didn't go back to that trailer that night until later. And I can remember going back to the trailer and how guilty I felt that I had betrayed my mother. And what Al-Anon has done for me, and what those traditions have done for me, and the family afterwards in the Big Book, what it did for me in those steps, and then it gave me an absolute foundation, a foundation thing to be rid of that, to let that go, and then to be able to get on with my life and with my children. But anyway, so the next night, and then my mother didn't come home. And so I went over to the trailer park. The people that owned the trailer park, their names were Adam and Eve. And they were great, and they were wonderful people. And they had a daughter that lived in New York, and she was a model and all this, and she was visiting, and they persuaded me to come over and have dinner. And I can remember going over there and having dinner with them, and I felt guilty because I wasn't at home, waiting at home. At that time, you know, now they call them latchkey kids. Well, I was just left home alone, but I didn't do what the movie did. But anyway, so there was a knock on the door, and my three aunts were there, and my uncle, and they came in, and they told me that my mother was dead. My mother dropped a lady. They had a baby shower for her. I didn't find this out until many years later, but they had a baby shower for her, and my mother was very anxious to get home. And I tell you, and so what she did is she took this lady to the train station so she could catch a train to go into Chicago. And my mother, I found out later, really didn't want to do that because she wanted to get home to make sure that my father had dinner and to make sure anything that, you know, that he wouldn't go to that bar that night because she was so pregnant. And she also said the night before that she had a premonition and that she wasn't going to make it through this pregnancy. She told my aunts, which I found out many years later. That's why the fourth step and the fifth step were so important to me. It was so important to me to really look at, you know, what my part in that was. And what AA talks about is that perception, this perception that I had of my father, that he killed my mother. And what she did is she stopped at the train station, the lady jumped off and got her train. My mother went across the tracks, another train hit her and flew her up against a pillar, a telephone post. She flew out the front window and landed probably back there at the back of the room. She was killed instantly. And that changed my life. You know, and I hear that all the time with alcoholics and addicts. I hear when they share anything, what changed their life? What spiritually changed their life where they had to completely be desperate? And, you know, my desperation went into absolute self-pity. Went into what we talked about is I became that victim, the kid, you know, motherless daughter, whatever. And I used that for my own purposes. Al-Anons have, you know, defects of character, too, and shortcomings. But I can remember that that night, and that was such a huge event in my life and growing up, is that that carried through with me until I got to you, until I got to Al-Anon and got with that sponsor with the blue hair and smoking that cigarette, you know. And, you know, oh, my God, what have I got myself into? And but what happened to me that night is that I, you know, it was so sad for me, but on the other hand, it propelled me then to be very super independent. And when I got here to Al-Anon, and after that, you know, sixth and seventh step, my sponsor said, you have to be interdependent. You have to be interdependent. You have to depend upon the program and the steps and the traditions in your life. And that's what I do, is that I use those not only in my life, but in my children's life, in my grandchildren's life, to be able to carry that message of hope. And that hope, anything, is not a false hope in Al-Anon. You know, because when I left, my father left, and we moved out to California, and children of alcoholics either get into early relationships, and I did. I was 17 years old, 18 years old, and I met this guy that was going through Mel's Drive-In in Sacramento, and I moved to Reno, and I married him. My father was in Vietnam for the last time of his service, and the only reason I married him was to get out of that house and to get away from there, and I was afraid of my father, too. But anyway, I went through that marriage, and I had two little girls, and I found out after I was married, about 3 years, two, three years, and my three aunts that were kind of like my guardians, what they did is they came to me and they said, your mother left a little insurance policy for you either to go to college or to, when you get married, to buy income property. I was really pissed. I was so resentful. I thought, if I had known that, if they would have told me that, I could have went to college. I was accepted at the university, Pasadena Playhouse. I could have been a great comedic actress, and I would have not been here. I'd been in a limo. So I write skits for Al-Anon. Bad skits. But anyway, our assets will become, clearer to us. And I can remember the resentment I had for that. That little insurance policy had gotten me a couple thousand dollars. And what I did is that I bought some income property. And then my husband's drinking. He got a position in Seattle. He went to work for Boeing, and we moved up to Seattle. And then the alcoholism, it wasn't his alcoholism. It was his drinking. It was how I was affected by his drinking and how I was, when I had to look at my part in that. And I went through Seattle, and I became a professional clown in Seattle because I was a comedic actress, and I wanted to do something to make some money. And so I became the first female clown in the United States that ever had her face copyrighted. And I had spoken to Red Skelton a number of years before that when I worked at Harris Entertainment, and Red Skelton said, do many different characters, which he did. Young people hear I say Red Skelton, they go, who? But so I was performing, making a lot of money, and I was doing a lot of stuff on weekends. I was Mrs. Santa Claus. I was the Easter Bunny. I was Betty Bunny. And then I had a gypsy outfit that I did gypsies for Nordstrom's in Seattle. And I had a crystal ball. I did all this, thing. And I was reading people's palms, and they believed me. It's like that story about the alcoholic comes home and he's so drunk, he's so hungover, and the wife says to him, okay, you got to go see the doctor. This is just got to stop. The Al-Anon says, He goes, you got to go see the doctor. You got to talk to the doctor. So they take off and they go, to the doctor, and of course, she's driving the car, right? And Al-Anons always drive the alcoholics. And so she takes him into the doctor's office, and so the doctor, takes him in, and he says listens to the alcoholic story and listens to the Al-Anon story, and he's drinking, he's doing this, and so the doctor says, hey, you step out, the Al-Anon, and he said, let me talk to the alcoholic by himself. So he talks to the guy, and then they call him both, calls her back in again, and he says, this is what you have to do. He said, you got to get up every morning, tells the Al-Anon this. You got to make him a really hearty breakfast. Make sure his shirts are all ironed. Make sure anything that he's got a lunch to take to work, Make sure anything that you, when he comes home at night, that you have dinner ready. And make sure that night, anything that you have a lot of sex. She goes, oh, really? And he goes, yes. He says, those are the things that you need to do that will help your husband to stop drinking. She goes, okay. So they walk out, and she's very quiet. She lets him drive. And so they're driving back to the house and thing, and he just can't stand it. Well, what did the doctor say? You were in there a pretty long time with him. She goes, you're going to die. That's the ultimate Al-Anon slip. When you kill him. Anyway, I had a very thriving business. I was on television. I was doing a lot of things, but I was neglecting my children. And I got a divorce through that period of time. I was going through a terrible, contentious divorce and a terrible separation thing from my husband, who was a great guy. He really was a good guy. He really was a good guy. And I ended up getting pregnant, and I had my daughter, Ambie, who today is 48 years old, and I have my granddaughter by her and also my great-granddaughter. And but anyway, so, you know, I left in humiliation. I left in then just like the alcoholic does. I left that situation, you know. I left that beautiful home in Seattle that I bought with my dead mother's money. You know, I left that marriage. I left, you know, I took my kids out of school, and I took the cat. Anybody cat lovers here, let me tell you, you don't take a cat on a trip back to Reno. That's where I lived, you know, before my husband and I moved up to Seattle. Anyway, I left in the middle of the night, a week before Christmas, took my kids out of school. I was the PTA president. I don't know how I managed that. I must have been bipolar or something. That's what they call it now. But anyway, I was just completely step two. I was friggin' insane. I was absolutely... And when I had to go back and make it, I was speaking in Seattle, and I had a bunch of the girls with me that I sponsor, and they said, oh, you know, you always talked about, you know, that you bought that totem pole out of the PTA money, that big totem pole at that kid's school, at your kid's school. I went, oh, yeah, I did that, you know. And they said, well, you know, you said you were going to make amends to the school. And I went, oh, God, then I'll have to pay for that friggin' totem pole, you know. And so this is what amends stories mean. Father Terry always talks about that. But anyway, I can remember being in Seattle, and we were all speaking, and I was speaking, and so finally the girl said, okay, Monday morning, you got to go to that school. I went, oh, my God, they're here with me. Oh, my God, you know, I got to do this. So anyway, I can remember going up to the school, walking up, and they're sitting in the van going, eh, okay, go in there. And I can remember walking into the principal's office, and that secretary was still there, who particularly didn't like me. And I said, well, I'm Betty Ann Zetz now, and I came here to see Mr. Johnson. She goes, oh, I remember you. And I see the totem pole out there. You know, now totem poles are very popular, and I'm sure they, you know, cost, you know, you talk about, you know, damage. But anyway, I'm like, oh, this financial damage. Oh, God, how am I going to do this? But anyway, you know, God's with you all the time. God's with you when you do those, you know, ninth step, and then you make that list and all that. And I can remember walking, and finally the principal, Mr. Johnson, and he was a Navy guy. And he always had tattoos, but he always wore long white shirts and a tie, you know. So she said, Mr. Johnson's still here. I went, oh, okay. So he calls me into the principal's office, and I'll tell you, I felt like I was in the principal's office. And I went in and I sat down. And it's just like in the entertainment business. When you walk into a producer or director's office and thing, it's really interesting. Their seat's very high up and you're very low. You got to look up to them, right? So I thought, he must have done that on purpose. But anyway, you know, so I said, Mr. Johnson, I'm Betty Ann Zetz now. I was Betty Ann Haynes. And, you know, I just want to make amends to you. I'm going, you know. 50 miles a minute, you know. I said, I'm really sorry about that totem pole, you know, I was the PTA president. And he just sits back and he looks at me, and finally when I shut up, he finally looks at me and he goes, Betty Ann, he goes, that was the greatest thing anybody ever did. He said, we love that totem pole. It's written up in Seattle magazines and all this kind of stuff. I said, well, I spent, you know, money for that totem pole, PTA money without their authorization, like Mary with Al-Anon. But, you know, don't want to spend group money. But he said, that's great. He said, you were the best PTA president we ever had. He said, you were the funnest, the funniest. We made more money when you were PTA president. And you know what? I did it for all the wrong motives. He goes, we love that totem pole. No problem. You don't have to make amends to me. He said, but you do have to do something. when you tell me about Al-Anon, he said, I need literature. I have a bunch of teachers here that really need that program. You know, so that's the gift, you know. And that's the gift that I had from leaving Seattle, leaving all of my, you know, friends. Well, didn't have any friends. But leaving the alcoholic, traveling down to Reno through a terrible snowstorm, three kids, the cat, going back to Reno with nothing. You know, we attempt the impossible with nothing. I made a geographic. Al-Anons do geographics too. And you know, and the story goes on from there, and it goes on and then for another 5 years, you know, and it goes on to all those nights working as a cocktail waitress and then working during the day as a normal job, doing my clown business on the side or whatever, you know. And the humiliation of it. I know no one came into Al-Anon humble. When I heard humbly asked him to remove those shortcomings, I remember when I came into Al-Anon, I didn't come in humble. I came in, I don't know about all of you, I came in humiliated. I was humiliated of my part and what was going on to me. And I came in, what they say in Al-Anon, I was physically, mentally, and spiritually bankrupt in every area of my life. Every area of my life. And then I met Bob. Bob. How long do I have to talk about Bob? How long am I doing? Can I? Ooh, that's a nice car. Okay. But anyway, Bob came in the bar I was working at, you know, and again, you know, he calls it, when he talks, when we talk together, or when he talks in AA, he talks about he went to this bar where everybody had hot pants. No, we wore hot pants. But anyway, of course, he picked me up, I picked him up, and then we realized that he was married. And my husband had a little gambling problem at the time, but he had a 5-star restaurant in Reno, and his wife worked there, and his ex-wife, other ex-wife would come in. My husband has a great story. He's been married 5 times. I'm his 5th wife. He married 2 wives twice. Just couldn't get it right. And he's a great alcoholic, let me tell you. Why in the hell am I with him? No. But anyway, you know, he was my attraction. You know, it says in Al-Anon, attraction, not promotion. Well, he promoted it, and I, you know, he was my attraction. And, you know, again, we caused wreckage. We caused wreckage. He had 3 children by his 1st wife. I had the 3 girls who are now living with my ex-husband. And we started on that, you know, that trudging that road to happy destiny. It was not happy destiny. You know, and the things that I did during those 13 months before Bob, I forced him to make that 3 decision, I am so humiliated by. And I can remember the nights that I would call the, you know, I'd leave the bar and then I'd go home and I'd call Whittlesey Cab because Bob always took Whittlesey Cab. If I left the restaurant and I went back to the apartment or whatever, then he'd call Whittlesey Cab to come pick him up and take him to the next bar or the next place, whatever. And I can remember I had this horrible resentment toward Whittlesey Cab, and I put it on my list. I said, that Whittlesey Cab, you know, they'd pick him up and do all this. And, you know, I really loved my mother-in-law in a very special way, too. But so what happened with that is that I can remember one time we were in Reno with my sponsor, Shirley, God rest her soul, and we were going into a marathon meeting, and Shirley goes, see all those Whittlesey Cab phones around the room? And I said, the auditorium? I said, yeah. She goes, Whittlesey Cab was on that list. You need to call Whittlesey Cab and make that amend. I went, oh, they're not going to remember me, you know. And my sponsor said, oh, yeah, they will. And, you know, because you disrupted their service. You disrupted them all the time. You called the dispatcher, you know, 24 times a night. You know, where do you have him? I know you got him. Where'd you leave him off? You know, where is he? So I just waited and waited. And then, you know, that little thing, and I'm sure this happened to alcoholics, you know, when your sponsor tells you to, you know, some direction to do something, you know, and it's in my head, I'm thinking, that bitch, I'm not doing that, you know. Or else I'll lie to her and say, I didn't know I had so special, you know. But she did say something that spiritually affected my life that day, is that, you know, you need to do this, Betty Ann, for you. This is your part. So I finally picked up the phone and then said, Whittlesey Cab. I said, hi, this is Betty Ann Zetsch. You probably don't remember me. And he goes, yes, I do. I said, I'm really sorry. I disrupted your business. You know, I'm an Al-Anon now. And he started chuckling. And I said, I know that I called you, you know, many, many times. I was obsessed. I had a lady of color when I was speaking in New Orleans once. She said, we were talking about obsession that the Al-Anon has with the alcoholic. And afterwards, she came up to me and she goes, honey, you weren't obsessed. You were possessed. I loved that lady. But I said, I'm just really sorry. And he said, wait, slow down, Betty Ann, slow down. He said, Betty Ann, he said, I'm so grateful that you called. But he said, let me tell you something. I used to make a lot of money off of you. I used to lay bets whether you'd find Bob or not. He said, I made a lot of money. We loved it. You know, we loved it. But it was like always in the background, you know, always in the background. You know, you can hear people, you know, and you're humiliated by those actions, you know. And that's, you know, what really propelled me that time when I met Bob and we got married and then everything became worse, you know. And I'd call Whittlesey Cab and they would bring him home some nights. And one night I threw out all that was in the fall just before Bob got sober. And I took all the leaves I'd raked up with I had my Marianne Turner bathrobe, God bless her soul. You know, and I smoked a cigarette on a French cigarette holder. I thought that looked cool. In the middle of the night, you know, and I'd drink coffee all night to keep myself awake. Now they have Red Bull. Oh, God, I miss that. And I'd wait up for Bob. And as soon as he'd come home, you know, my Sally, my sponsor, my late sponsor, would always say, you know, our mouths are attached to the doorknob, you know. Where have you been? What have you been doing? How much have you had to drink? You know, what bride were you with? Yeah, da-da-da. And what happened for me is that night Whittlesey Cab brought him home, and I'd been out there making sure we lived in the right neighborhood. We had a big picture window. Harold Smith's wife lived across the street. She was a bad alcoholic, and they had a security guard out there that guarded that house. And this is the story. Let me tell you something. My behaviors and things that I did. Cindy was talking about it today and how I used to move furniture around. So when Bob came home drunk, he'd come in the house and he'd fall over the furniture. And then he'd think he was in the wrong house and get up and go some next door. You know, I mean, the alcoholics are sitting there going, yeah, I get that, you know. Then I tried to drown him one time, you know. I'm thirsty, so I kept pouring water while he's on the floor, you know. Thank God I didn't know CPR. But anyway, I can remember my Fredericks to Hollywood outfit. I had a Fredericks to Hollywood outfit with one of those things, you know, the tassels and all this and the G-string. Now they're really popular. And that long crepe paper robe, you know, it's black and has fur on it. Not real fur, I'm sure. So all you lovers of animals. And I had those high heels, those glass slippers from... that have pom-poms. Oh, you know it. You wear that outfit. Anyway, so... And I used to go out with those slippers with that bathrobe on. And then what I would do is aerate the lawn with those high heels. You know, because I see my neighbors doing it. So this night, Bob comes home. And I can remember the adrenaline was rushing. This is going to get him. You know, da-da-da. He comes on the porch. He's smoking a cigar. And he's in blackout. I don't know that. And, you know, finally what I do is, you know, get in this house. And he's like, you know, whatever. So, I just had that moment of clarity. I threw him off the porch, covered him up with those leaves, put that cigar in his mouth. It was the 70s. What the hell? Burn, baby, burn. Ran inside, looked at the insurance papers, and realized that he borrowed money on him. So I had a moment. A moment of compassion, I went back and took the cigar out. And I left him out there all night. But what was really interesting, that little security guard that sat in that little car, you know, night after night, he comes up to the door. And I'm in my little Fredericks to Hollywood outfit. And I'm smoking. And he comes to the door. And he knocks on the door. And I open the door in my Fredericks to Hollywood outfit. And he's looking at me, you know, kind of like up and down. He goes, excuse me, but you have somebody on the front lawn. And, you know, the arrogance of the Al-Anon. Get out of here. Go away. People, places, and things we blame, you know. Go away. Go back to your little car with your little gun and, you know, whatever. Arrogancy. The humiliation of that. And you know, he did. He went back to that car. And you know, so then I let Bob get up off the lawn, you know, and drug him in. And I can remember my little daughter, Ambie, was walking out in the pathway and saw him in the leaves, and the leaves moved. And she was meeting her little friend, Leslie Conklin. You know, how do you make amends for that years later? How do you make amends to your children when they grow up? How do you put yourself in a positioning to have that change of attitude, to show our children a new way and a new path of recovery? You know, it takes many years, and it takes many, many four steps and many, you know, of helping others. And that's what my sponsor always told me. We're here to help others, you know, to clean up your own house, but and get your own house in order. Years later, after Bob got sober, you know, my sponsor said, well, on the list, you have a security guard. I said, what security guard? She goes, don't you remember? We're at the convention again in Reno, the Fall Festival. I said, what the hell do you mean? She goes, you had that security guard. He came over, you yelled at him, you know, this is the story you told me. I went, oh, God. She goes, yes, you have to make amends to him. I said, well, he won't remember me. That he probably doesn't work for that company. Nobody ever stays in the security company that long. She goes, it doesn't matter. Make amends to anybody in the company. And I said, oh, okay, fine. So they went into the meeting, and so I again picked up the phone, and I called the security company, and I said, hi, this is Betty Ann Zetz. Is John Taylor there? And he goes, yeah, he's just walking in for shift, for the evening shift. I went, really? And he goes, yeah, just a second. So he comes to the phone, and I said, hi, John Taylor, this is Betty Ann Zetz. And he goes, I used to live on Holcomb Lane. Da-da-da. You know, I'm telling him this. And he goes, oh, yeah, I remember you, Betty Ann. He goes, I used to beg for the night shift. I used to beg for it. If the only thing ever happened that night was at your house, you know. And I said, well, I really need to make amends to you. He goes, no problem, no problem. He goes, is Bob alive? Just telling you about Al-Anon stories. But I want to tell you what happened with that after sobriety and after my husband got sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, the first year I got pregnant with my son, J.R., and, you know, I didn't think I'd get pregnant. You know, Bob told me that. You know, I believed him. And the second year we had, you know, we had our twin daughters, Amy and Allison. Bob told me he couldn't get pregnant. You know, his second wife couldn't. We got rid of the ex-wives. Almost got rid of my mother-in-law, who I love in a special way. But again, you know, even in Al-Anon, there's still that conflict, you know. There's still that. But you know what? We love the program. We love Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, the first speaker my husband and I listened to was Clancy. Friends of ours in Reno, you know, they said, we have a tape. Come over to our house and listen to this tape. And I can remember Bob and I were listening to this tape, and I didn't get it too much, except, you know, for some of the crazy stuff. And then, you know, after we left, you know, Bob says, that guy's a crazy son of a bitch. And, you know, it was so funny today, he's Bob's sponsor. My husband's a member of the Pacific Group. That's how the steps work. That's how the traditions work. That's how the fellowship works. That's how the program works. But anyway, so we have these two little kids, with three little kids, and these babies were born early, and guess who was there at the hospital? I had emergency surgery. All of you were there. People that came into the restaurant, all my doctors and all the people that came into our restaurant, this, you know, five-star restaurant, all those people, and they, you know, were there for us that were in the program. 3 months later, I went into the room to feed Allison, and she was dead. She died of SIDS. And the first person I called was Al-Anon. I called Dottie Dickens. I'll never forget it. And I said, Dottie, you got to help me. I just lost Allison. Allison died of SIDS. And the alcoholic ambulance owner, Marcia, I'll never forget. You know, she was the one that owned the ambulance company. And, you know, she was sober that day. And so they called, and she came over to my house. All the Alateens and the Alateen sponsors, and they came over to our house to wait for our kids to get off the buses from school. You know, my little girl, Amy, again, in the program, you know, the other twin, They took her immediately to the hospital at St. Mary's, where I was on the St. Mary's Guild to look good, you mean, before Bob got sober. Oh my God, that's my phone. It must be for my kidney transplant. Turn it off on the side. But anyway, only me. Never has happened. But Al-Anons were there. Al-Anons were there for me and for my husband. And I can remember the first, you know, I had to call my father, and I had to tell my father. My father was drunk when I called him and told him that my twin had died. And I can remember my father saying to me in his drunken stupor, "You must have killed her." You know, I lost my twin brothers. My father's drinking really progressed after that. And you know, I did something, I surrendered. I surrendered that day, and I handed the phone to my husband, Bob. Which, you know, I play those three M's, mother, manager, martyr. I had done that for 2 years in the program. You know, I managed everybody's life. I was trying to manage my kids' lives. I was trying to manage everybody else's life, trying to be the mother. You know, I was completely out of control. And so when that baby died, you know, I had to surrender that and turn those kids over to you. 3 weeks later, I was going to my meeting on Wednesday night, and I was taking Amy with me, and I had JR, and Bob was upstairs in the A meeting, and I just cried. I cried for weeks, you know. And this third week, I think it was, I was crying, and I said, you know, I'm so afraid that Amy's going to die. And I said that in the meeting, and all the old-timers, you know, would take, you know, JR and Amy out, and they told them while I just sat there and sobbed. And they had a meeting anyway. You know, and today I look at our group. I look at my Tradition 5 group. I look at our babysitting. I look at our newcomers meeting. I look at our preteen meeting. I look at our allo-teen meeting. I look at the family groups of what Lois Wilson and Ann Bingham gave to us. I look at our groups, and because I had many times with Lois Wilson before she died, the last 10 years of her life. I'm so grateful for that. Ann Bingham, who lived in Santa Paula, retired in Santa Paula, who Bill sponsored her husband, the other founder and the first secretary of the Al-Anon office up above with the AAs in New York. You know, I have a lot of history with Al-Anon. And, you know, that night when I went home after that meeting and I got, you know, my older girls, Deanna and I, Kimberly and Amy, they, you know, they took JR and they got him in the crib. And I had Amy, boy, I had Amy right beside me because I was afraid that she was going to pass. And, you know, there was a knock on the door. And this is what the program does for us. There's a knock on the door, and there's three of those Al-Anon ladies, and they were in these onesies and these slippers, or, you know, jammies and slippers, these big slippers. And, you know, this is in Reno. It's February. It's cold. And they had their pillows and blankies, and they said something at that door that is been with me for these last, you know, 40 years. And they said something to me. They said, "Betty Ann, we're going to walk you through fear. We're coming in your house, and we're going to spend the night. We're going to come over every night until we can walk you through that fear." And that's the gift of the fellowship, and that's the gift of the program. Doing something for someone else and not getting found out. That's why Just for Today, Mary, is so important to us. Just for today. Those ladies came in and they stayed there and they took care of my children. They cooked for me, for us. They took care of us. And then finally, after about, I think, 2 weeks, one night they were all sitting there. We all talked. I said, "You know what, you guys? You can leave now. I'm okay." They said, "No, you're not. We're going to leave when we leave." Okay. Could never get rid of them. But they did. They walked me through that fear. And then Bob and I went to Texas, and we had a wonderful time in Texas. We lived in Dallas. You know, alcoholics take sober geographicals, too, because of my husband's business. And then we met a guy in New Orleans, and that was an architect, and he said, "Come out to L.A. My girls were older then, and when my oldest daughter stayed in Texas, was going to college there. And then my other kids, we went to L.A., and we moved to Agora and made the trip out here. And I can remember one night, you know, that I'm trying to find meetings, and I found a great meeting in Thousand Oaks. And, you know, again, that progression of, you know, the disease of Al-Anonism. I loved Al-Anon. I wanted to be part of something. And that Thursday night group just absolutely healed us. But we had a lot of, you know, we had a lot of stuff going on during that time. And whatever was going on, you were always there. I never missed a meeting, you know, always went to meetings. And then, you know, years ago, my son went off. We wanted him to graduate from high school and go to college, you know, go to Notre Dame. And then my husband wanted him to have him become a 49er, play for the 49ers. And my son didn't graduate, and he became a Grateful Dead person. He went to the Grateful Dead, you know, and he had his path. And today he's a father. Today he lives in Michigan with his wife. She's clean and sober in the last 3 years. I have two grandchildren. See, the program works, absolutely works for us. And again, I got very active in Al-Anon up in Thousand Oaks and also in the Valley. And I realized again that there was something missing that was in my life. And I watched my daughter, my youngest daughter, that other twin. And, you know, 20 years ago, I watched that daughter come in one night, and she was kind of floating in the house. And I watched again, you know, because my sponsor said, you know, you put down the magnifying glass, pick up the mirror, you know, you got to let go and let God. And I watched my daughter descend into the, you know, the disease of addiction and alcoholism. I watched her for a number of years, you know. And we didn't, you know, our sponsors led us through that too. We didn't do for her what she needed to do for herself. Because my husband belongs to the Pacific Group and because we had strong sponsorship, I mean, we were able to let my daughter go. We were able to let go and let God, all those slogans. We were able to watch, you know, that descent into the hell of alcoholism. We watched her thing when she got sober and 19 years ago, she got sober, and she was sober for, you know, about 4 or 5 months, and she met a guy, and that guy, you know, they had a baby, and at 9 months when that baby was born, Cole was born, I had to take him away from her, because she was back out again. And I've just raised him. He's going to be 19 years old next month, and he's a great kid. He's a great, great kid. And he's, you know, looking at trying to go to film school at USC. Now, how does that happen? How does that happen with us? Only because of you. Because of you that write letters for him. You that have supported him. You know, all of you that were there for his birthdays and for his baby showers. You that were there, you know, for my daughter. Every time my daughter would get clean, you know, whatever. You know, you were there for her. You know, and then my other daughter, she married an alcoholic. He's sober 35 years. They live in Reno. I have two beautiful grandchildren by her. My other daughter, Deanna, works for the gas company. She's got her master's degree from USC, and she's doing great. She's a big wheel at the gas company and won't pay my bill. And she's very successful. And my daughter, Abby, and my grand... You know, my kids are great. They really are. I love my kids. I love my kids a lot. But you know what happened to me about 15 years ago? I said, it's got to be something for parents of alcoholics and addicts. And so what we did is we started Al-Anon parent focus meetings. You know, Al-Anon gives us a purpose, and it gives us that purpose. And thank you, Mary, and all the ladies here that are Al-Anon sponsors and are of service, at GRs, intergroup reps, whatever. Thank you so much. And so what happened with that is that, again, you know, we started the four-step workshops. I started the Catalina conference, you know, over in Catalina. Those things have been going on for 26 years. And my kids have been part of that. You know, they've seen that. They've seen us being of service and you know, helping other people and doing that. But only because of that we have, like we talked about last night, Jack did, we have that 11th step. We have prayer. We have meditation. And, it, you know, Al-Anons used to have a slip. They used to say prayer and medication. And but today, you know, and that many, I think the hardest thing for us when we started the parent focus meetings was that our first meeting, we had 86 people, 86 parents. And today, our Monday night meeting in Westlake, you know, we have an average of 76 to 86 people come every Monday night. Tell you, it's an epidemic, but you know what? We're there. We're there for families. And I see families come and go. I see their sons overdose. And I saw that thing in my own family when Cole was 4 years old. His father had 8.5 years of sobriety, and all of a sudden he overdosed. Stopped going to meetings, stopped playing sober ball, and he overdosed. We've lost two grandsons to this disease. You know, and my husband lost his son at 42 years old to this disease. You know, we've had a lot of loss, but the gains that we've had here in the program has always been that foundation. And that's what the program teaches us, is the foundation, helping others, being of service, reaching out. You know, when my son, realized when he was 11 years old, we got him a child psychologist. We got outside help for him. And at 11 years old, he realized that his father died not from smoking, but from addiction, from heroin. And I asked my grandson came to me. He goes, "Is it really true my father died from an overdose of drugs?" And I said, "Yes." And he goes, "You know, Grammy, he's in the right and perfect place. You always say that. He's in the right and perfect place." I said, "I know he is." He goes, "I heard in an AA meeting one time," he said, "that he's at the big meeting in the sky." I said, "Yes, he is at the meeting in the sky," because he said, "They'll let anybody in, whether they're drinking or not." That's the gift of the program. Another thing that I want to end with is that I can remember the first time Amy went to jail, and you get that phone call. Mommy, please help me. You got a collect call from an inmate. And I was able to say to her, because she'd been in and out of AA, I was able to say to her, "I love you, Amy, very much. But," I said, "you only can call me on Sundays. Mommy, I need your help." I said, "I know you do. But I can't give you the help that you need. You need to call somebody in Alcoholics Anonymous." "Okay, Mom, I'll do that." And then other times, I'm calling from jail. And then the one time that I did go to the jail in downtown L.A., she called, Mom, please come see me. My daughter loves us. She loves her family. I have 5 children, you know. All of her siblings, she went through all of her siblings. My daughter is, as it says in the book, a tornado going through people's lives. The disease has taken her to that place. So I remember one day I called my sponsor and I said, "Amy wants me to come to the jail. She wants to see me." My sponsor said, "Yeah, go. Make a 12-step call on your daughter." I said, "Okay." So I took literature. I took Al-Anon literature, and I also took AA literature. I go rip it off. But I took AA literature, and I put it in my purse and all that. And when you're in the waiting room at the downtown L.A. jail, it's not a pretty sight. People are there with their kids. It's noisy, dirty, loud, and it's humiliating. And you know what? I did a lot of 12-step work in that room because you have to wait for hours, and then they humiliate you when you finally get up to the gate, you know, and they let you through, and they look at your license, and they're stern, and they're not nice, and, you know. But I knew that I could take my God in there, and that's what I always tell the women I sponsor, and I tell people on the 4-step, you know, the same thing when they leave on Sunday. Always, when you get home, put your hand out, put your God in first, and put all of us in behind you. And that's what I did. And I finally got through the line and went up the elevator with all these people from different cultures and taking their kids up to see the prisoners and all this. And, you know, I had compassion. My daughter wasn't hanging around with her lower companions. My daughter was a lower companion because of her disease of addiction. And I can remember getting up there, and they finally get through the doors, and you got to go to this, you know, plate glass window in the L.A. jail. And I can see my daughter walking in that orange jumpsuit, you know. And I can see that, you know, dyed hair that's grown out. Where would I be without you? Where can I be than that place that day? I had a spiritual experience out of that. My daughter sat down on the stool
just, "Mommy, Mommy," and she put her hand up. And she said to me, "Mommy, Mommy, please help me. I love you so much." Then her last words were, "I'll never do this again, Mommy." We want to believe in our literature, it says, which is written all by us all these years. It's not written outside sources or outside therapies or treatment or anything else. It's written by us. Whenever there's a sober period, you want to believe that the problem has gone away. But Al-Anon has taught me the problem is still there. And the problem is within my daughter and her relationship with the God of her understanding. And I can remember that day, you know, with my hand on that window, telling her what Hal Marley used to say. "I love you, Amy. I love you so much. I hate to see you hurt yourself this way." And many times, many jails, and then prison. But my focus has always been on the foundation of what Al-Anon and Alcoholics Anonymous has taught us. We trudge the road to happy destiny, but we have a purpose, and that purpose is to trust the process. And that process was for me to, I have to be well to be able to take care of this grandson and the rest of my family. I've got to be strong for that. And the only strength that I get is from the steps and from those traditions with our family. I don't have enough time to tell you all the other stories, but I'll tell you one thing that was a healing process. You know, my father and I used to always, you know, avoided my family like the plague. And my stepmother, my father remarried again after my mother, and my stepmother was a typical untreated Al-Anon. And she, until the day she died, she waited on my father hand and foot. And they put her finally in an assisted living home. And I can remember going up there and having to visit her with my stepsisters. And my stepsister was very, very close to her mother and my stepmother. And I can remember going in that assisted living and watching my stepsister. That we had lost my brother, my stepbrother. He died of alcoholism in the middle of the night. And I watched my sister go in there. And I had compassion for my sister because she has no program, you know. And I was able to walk in there with dignity and grace and to be able to be of service to my sister. And at the end of my father's life, for the last 4 years of my father's life, since he was, you know, 89, 90 years old, I watched my sister take care of him, hold down a full-time job at the state. I saw that I need to be of service to my family, and I did that. You know, over the years, I go to Sacramento before I go to Reno or before I go to speak. I always stop in Sacramento. That's what my sponsor told me you do. You show up. You show up early. You stay late. And, you know, I don't want to stay there. I don't want to go to his house. You know, my father never said, "I love you." And I would call them every week. I'd send him postcards, you know, to my family. I'd send them postcards from everywhere we'd go throughout the world or go to the internationals or go speaking or whatever. I'd always send my parents postcards. I can remember one time my father said to me, he goes, "Where in the hell do you go all over that AA and Al-Anon stuff, you know?" And he goes, "You keep sending us all these postcards. Where do you get the money to do that?" And I said, "Don't. I take it from them." No. But that's the gift. The gift of it is that, you know, this fellowship was with me when my father... And I said, you know, "My dad, it's like Lois, you know, it's what happened for us. You know, what happened for us, and then it's the fellowship pays for that." And he said, "Well, that's very nice, you know." But before he died, my sister told me this. She goes, "You know, Dad used to always read those postcards off and on. For years, he loved those postcards. And when he wouldn't get a postcard, he'd be really upset about it." She goes, "That really was a gift, Betty Ann." She said, "Do you want those postcards?" I said, "No, why don't you put them in the casket with him?" Because my father traveled around the world with the Air Force. But anyway, there is a God in our life today. My daughter is still out there. I get a text from her once in a great while. And it's always, Mom, I love you so much. I love you and Dad so much. My husband's very ill. He's been ill for the last couple years with dialysis. But again, who's there? You're there for us. You're there to help us to get through that. And again, I want to leave you with, I have my little Al-Anon card, and I'm a little bit off today, but I want to leave you with this saying, that this prayer that Bob's sponsor, Keith, gave to us, and I put it on my Al-Anon card. It says, Dear God, help me to accept the seemingly bad as well as the good which is necessary for my growth. And I'm so grateful, Kevin and Tanya and Mark, so grateful for this committee and thing for asking me to be here this weekend and to be part of your lives. And I hope that you come down to Los Angeles, come to my Woodland Hills meeting or my Westlake meeting, and come be part of my life. Thank you so much. God bless.